From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Maryland Morning. The city of Baltimore just opened its first new recreation center in about a decade. It's in the Morrill Park neighborhood in southwest Baltimore, and it's part of a plan that included closing some rec centers last year. We talk about it with the director of Baltimore's Recs and Parks, Ernest Burkine. Then, a horse changed the life of writer Rita Zoe Chin.
He taught me to be brave for him, and also, you know, he taught me a lot about love.
I talk with Chin about her new memoir, Let the Tornado Come. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews Woolly Mammoth Theater Company's production of a play whose title we've got to bleep on the radio, Stupid Bird. And Tom Hall and chef Sasha Wollhandler discuss some recipes that require you to get out of the kitchen this August. First, the news.
I'm producer Matt Purdy. To catch the news, you'll need to listen to us live on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings at 9 o'clock. That's on 88.1 FM in Baltimore and Frederick, 106.9 in Ocean City, and streaming at WYPR.org. Now, on with the podcast.
Thanks, Nathan. This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. It's summertime. Baltimore's pools are seeing record numbers of pool users, and rec centers are bustling. It got us thinking about the future of those pools and rec centers. The city approved a plan to consolidate rec centers several years ago, and plans for the pools are being developed as well. And with us to talk about the direction of our city's pools and recs is the director of Baltimore City's Department of Recreation and Parks, Ernest Burkine. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm just great. How are you doing?
Wonderful.
The city's first newly built recreation center in a decade opened a week ago in southwest Baltimore's Morrill Park neighborhood. It's part of that plan to consolidate rec centers, creating fewer but higher quality rec centers in the city. How far along is that plan?
Well, Rita Church was completed last year.
This is a renovated historic building in Clifton Park.
Clifton Park, that's correct. Morrill Park, we just opened this year. Next year, we plan to open one in Cherry Hill. And the idea, of course, is to create what you call a multi-purpose center that will service more people, including not just children, but seniors, young adults, and all.
So that's already under construction?
It is in design.
It's in design.
Design is completed. It is about ready to go out for bid.
Okay. And are other rec centers coming along behind it?
It will come behind that, yes. But Cherry Hill is the next one. We hope to have that up and running within a year or so. And then after that, there'll be another site that we will center on and go from there.
Is that picked yet? What the next, after Cherry Hill, what the next rec center?
We're still deciding that.
Well, yeah. Your department contracted with a consulting firm, Greenplay Incorporated, to advise you on the future of Baltimore's recreation center network. And am I right that that report is due in September?
Yes.
At a cost of more than $50,000. What are the issues that rec centers face that you think the consulting firm will help you with?
Well, one of the things that we want to look at is where recreation is being offered throughout the city. Where there are gaps and where there are duplications. We don't have to be the only game in town. If someone is providing recreation someplace, then we can provide it someplace else. I mean, that's about shared resources and using your money wisely. So Greenplay is helping us to look at that and help us make decisions on where the next centers should go.
And that sounds eminently reasonable to me. What confuses me is, before your time, there was a huge upset in this city in closing nearly two dozen rec centers. Wasn't there a plan for what the future should be in place before those painful decisions were made?
Well, I think what happened is that they had a task force that looked at the rec centers and they made some decisions. But, you know, Baltimore has been in place for a very long time. You haven't had a master plan since the early 1990s. And that's what needs to take place. We need to have a master plan to look at how are you going to go about the future. And so Greenplay is just the start of it. This is like a revolution of sorts, you know, looking at how things have changed. I mean, the world has changed, and we have to change the way we provide services and who our partners are, and we have to reach out and get more people to assist us.
So the Greenplay Consulting Report in a month or so is the beginning of a master plan process?
Well, it's a beginning of a plan that will take me to the master plan. I need to show that there is this tremendous need for a long-term solution and not just short terms.
That's Ernest Perkin, director of Baltimore City's Department of Recreation and Parks, here on 88.1 Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about the state of recreation and parks in the city. You're also creating plans for city pools.
That's correct. At the same time that we're doing the rec centers, we're doing pools also. Right now we have 18 swimming pools that are outdoor and 3 indoors. And my contention is if we're going to teach kids, every child in the city of Baltimore, how to swim, when we build a rec center, we need to have an indoor pool because it needs to be operating 365 days a year and not just, 3 months during the summer. You don't get very much out of that.
And so you envision a pool being part of every rec center.
Absolutely.
Going forward.
I would like to put a pool in every school if I could.
Is the pool's design, is that part of what this consultant report is
Absolutely.
Also going to address?
Absolutely.
And what kind of marching orders did you give them? What you just told us?
Exactly. That's what we're looking for. Our mission is to teach every child how to swim, and the only way you can do that is to have facilities available.
So I'm trying to process what you just told me, the options that I saw a year ago when we talked. There was an indoor outdoor balance model that was being looked at, of having a balance of indoor and outdoor pools. There was a plan called neighborhood distribution to sort of have pools in lots of neighborhoods, and an integrated schools/ Baltimore Recreation Parks Aquatics model. And what you just said doesn't give me a clue about which of those would describe it.
Well, no, because all those things are on the table. And what we're doing is we're looking at everything to look at how we, in fact, can provide the service, what the cost is going to be, how feasible it's going to be, and where these things should be located. So nothing is off the table. The idea of having Greenplay in is to assist us in making these decisions. When you have someone who's independent, they're not nearly as emotional about things. And so you can get to things more objectively.
Let's talk about audits. I read in Baltimore Brew that your department had not been audited for decades before the city audit that was released 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. What did you learn from that audit?
For me, it's important to understand the process and whether you're doing things right or wrong. And when an audit says that you're not doing something right, then it gives us an opportunity to go back and say, well, how should we do these things so that we can do them right? Because if you haven't done an audit on a regular basis, then bad habits begin to creep in. So for me, it's an educational model, and it's something that we should be looking to do every other year.
How have financial controls there changed since the audit came out? Because there was a picture of a fair amount of confusion.
And that's correct. And our physical chief has to work with the finance department on a closer basis. We've identified a couple of things that we need to work on to communicate more and those kind of things. And we're going to get to it.
When you and I talked a year ago, you told us that you thought more training for your workers might be more important than a bigger budget in improving the experience that Baltimore citizens have of recreation and parks. What kind of training have you done?
Well, we've been trying to do what you call in-house training, primarily focusing on customer service. I don't think that we do a really good job customer service. I think that we should be a model for customer service. And so we've been focusing on customer service, and you recognize that when you bring people into the workplace, if they haven't worked any place or if they haven't had training in many years, they develop a number of bad habits. And so that's what we've focused on this year is customer service.
And so how are things different than when you came a year and a half ago?
Well, I can say that, as I said to you last year, we opened the pools Memorial Day weekend. We closed Labor Day, and we service so many more individuals. Now, the more individuals you service, the more issues you encounter, and that becomes a training in itself. And so the very fact that we have more people using the facilities has helped us to learn quite a bit about, you know, how to go about servicing those people.
You think you're doing a better job now than when you then? You think the department's doing a better job now than when you came?
We're doing a better job than when I came, but we have a long ways to go. We're not where we need to be.
And we have less than a minute left. What is the thing that Baltimore citizens should be looking for from your department?
Well, anytime you see something that's wrong, you should not hesitate to give us a call so that we can address those things. I don't mind being criticized about the things that we're not doing. I'd like to know so that we can correct those things.
I appreciate your coming in to talk to us. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Ernest Burkeen, he's director of Baltimore City's Department of Recreation and Parks. We have more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. And a quick correction to something I said on Friday. I confused the last name of one of our guests. It's Maureen Harvey, who walked us through her post-college job search. I'm sorry, Maureen. My last name is Cast. Just ahead, how a horse taught a Baltimore girl about love. Stay with us on 88.1.
I'm producer Matt Purdy. Go to our website to learn more about the segment you just heard, check out our audio archives, or to join in on the conversation yourself. You can also make a pledge to support local programming like Maryland Morning. That's wypr.org/Maryland Morning.
It's Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Rita Zoe Chin spent most of her growing up years in Maryland, but it wasn't the kind of growing up you might assume when you first meet the pretty, slender, accomplished woman with the long, dark hair. Her father beat her with fists and a belt buckle, once threw a brick at her when she woke him to say she wasn't feeling well. Her mother, depressed and angry, rejected her and called the cops on her with a made-up story about a crime. Chin was 11 when she started running away. By 14, she was in jail. She lived in state-run institutions or on the streets and often slept in the beds of people who wanted something from her. She hit bottom when she got addicted to cocaine. Somehow she survived. The life she grew into, how it reflected and transcended the violence she'd absorbed, and how she made sense of it all that is the subject of her new memoir, Let the Tornado Come. And Rita Zoe Chin is with me in the studio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sheila. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, congratulations on this book. It's really beautifully written, and it really pulls the reader in. I don't know what of all the details you share people should know about your childhood. What do you think people need to know to understand where this book is coming from?
Well, I think that what people need to know is that what I've realized in writing this book is that I'm a very stubborn person. And there are three journeys happening in this book alongside each other at different points in time. And one of those journeys is my childhood as a runaway. And what all three of these journeys basically have in common is that I am going against the odds in a big way. I did grow up in a violent home, but I did start running away. And even though, you know, the streets are not a place that I would ever recommend for a kid in trouble, the act of running was one of the most empowering things I'd ever done in my young life. And because I believed in something better, and that belief, that stubborn hope, is kind of what carries through all the three narratives in the book.
Did you think when you got to be an adult that you had put all that baggage of childhood behind you?
Absolutely, I did. In fact, you know, I married a wonderful man. We moved to a beautiful house in a small town in Massachusetts, across the street from Cal's. You know, it was the kind of, like, it's a wonderful life town is what I called it. And I had never been in a more safe, peaceful, beautiful place. And then, of course, that's when I started having panic attacks.
Yeah, tell us about the panic attacks. First of all, what is a panic attack for somebody who hasn't been around one?
Sure. A panic attack is essentially it's a fight-flight response that happens at the wrong time. So we all know that feeling when you've been woken up in the middle of the night to a strange sound or somebody cuts you off on the road and your heart is pounding. But what happens in a panic attack is the brain perceives something that it thinks is dangerous, but there's no obvious threat. But the body goes into a full-fledged fight-flight response. So the shot of adrenaline goes and triggers all these physiological things to happening, like, you know, the pounding heart, tunnel vision, all these things, essentially to prepare the body to either fight or flee. And so it's a very terrifying experience when you haven't heard the weird sound in the middle of the night and you're just sitting at your desk, like, mindlessly surfing the internet or something like that.
And you actually thought you had a heart problem.
I did. I did. And when the first one happened, that's exactly what I was doing. I was sitting at my desk kind of, you know, in just a very calm way, and my heart took off and I got up and grabbed the phone and thought I was having a heart attack and called 911.
And eventually you had a cardiac workup and it wasn't that. But did you not in the early months connect that at all to everything you had, all the violence you had absorbed as a child?
I didn't, because, again, I had come so far, and I thought that was behind me. I had a great life. I was happy. You know, I was teaching. I was writing. You know, I had two really cute dogs. there was nothing in my life that made me think that wasn't behind me. And but turns out, of course, that what was underlying my panic was PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and some of that I had to trace back to my childhood and process.
Some of that?
Yeah. Okay, a lot of that. Probably all of that. Yeah, but it was interesting, though, because I also found myself looking back to my childhood for strength during that time, because I've never been a fearful person. You know, I've gone hang gliding and spelunking and all kinds of things. And suddenly I was afraid to do even the most basic tasks. And that was shocking to me. And so I found myself looking back at my childhood with a kind of a sense of awe, almost, at whatever this 14-year-old girl did, she was brave. She ran away because she believed in something better. And I kind of looked to her for strength when I was panicking. And was trying to find a way to get through my panic.
And do you have a sense then of why that strength that you showed as a runaway almost reversed itself in your new nice adult life?
You know what I think? Sometimes I think it's like when you go on vacation and you get sick. Like the minute you let your guard down. And I think that's what happened. I'd been running all my life. And that kind of motion, in a way, is a feels like a flight response. And I often think of myself as a horse. So I had always sort of been in flight. And now finally I had come to rest in this beautiful place, in this peaceful town. And I was very isolated and secluded. And all of a sudden, I guess I still needed to be in flight. And so, but it was a great opportunity because I actually got to go back and look at my childhood and kind of deal with it in a different way, a more present way.
That's author and poet Rita Zoe Chin here on Maryland Morning 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about her new memoir, Let the Tornado Come. So while all this is going on, the craziness of a really violent childhood and then these panic attacks as an adult, can you explain what this pull is that you kept feeling toward riding horses?
You know, I had longed for horses from afar since I was a child. I think a lot of girls do. And for me, there's nothing more beautiful, graceful, powerful than watching a horse. It sparked an absolute passion. And there was a way, I was looking for a lot of cures. And then in the middle of all that, I found peace and solace in talking to the horses, being with the horses, smelling the horses. You know, when you walk into a barn, that smell.
And tell us about Claret.
Oh, Claret.
Claret is the special horse.
He's very special. That's the third narrative in the book where I go against the odds. He had some serious panic problems of his own, unfortunately, and a very spirited, huge-hearted horse who's mischievous and fun and engaging, but really needs to trust the people he's around. And I don't know what his history was, but I know that with me, I went through two trainers who gave up on him. He was kind of rebellious, and the more he rebelled, the more they sort of beat him down. And eventually he was not rideable. I was told to sell him for a dollar. I was actually, somebody said to me, he's like a bad boyfriend. Just get rid of him and move on with your life. And of course, I was a novice rider myself, and I really needed the help of trainers, but I believed in this horse more than anything, just as I believed in a better life when I was a runaway. And so again, there's that stubbornness, right? And so I kept him, and I found another trainer who took us on and helped us, and she worked with him in a more positive way, and he responded to that instantly. Because not all, just like people, not all horses are alike, and this is a horse you can't beat into submission, and thankfully, I wouldn't want a horse like that.
So what would you say you learned from Claret?
Well, you know, Claret helped me learn to be brave, to be really, truly brave. I had to be strong for him because he was relying on me. And also, he's a 1,400-pound animal that, you know, if he gets out of control, can be very dangerous. So there's a way in which being with the horses, it's an external reality. The fear is external, whereas like panic is very internal in your mind, but you don't have time for any of that when you're with the horses because you actually have to be very present to what's going on outside of yourself, outside of your own mind. And so he taught me to be brave for him. And also, you know, he taught me a lot about love. And I think that love makes you do crazy things. So I kept him, and because I watched him get better. I watched him rise up from his panic, and that helped me with mine.
I appreciate your talking to us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rita Zoe Chin. She titled her memoir, Let the Tornado Come. We've got more information about it on our website, wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. It's Marilyn Morning. We'll have more after a break. Stay with us on 88.1.
I'm producer Matt Purdy. Do you have thoughts on that segment you just heard? Email us at mdmorning@wypr.org or find us on Twitter. We are at Marilyn Morning. Now, back to the show.
On 88.1, it's Marilyn Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Nathan Sterner. Today, theater critic J. Wynn Russick brings us her thoughts on a highly regarded play that's at the Woolly Mammoth Theater in Washington. The play has a title we can't actually say on air. Here's Judy to explain.
Let's get this out of the way first. There's an expletive smack dab in the middle of this play's three-word title, Stupid F***ing Bird. But this is far from a stupid F***ing play. To the contrary, it's an irreverent homage to one of the greatest masterpieces of dramatic literature, Anton Chekhov's The Seagull. Or, in playwright Aaron Posner's words, it's a meta-theatrical riff that is sort of adapted from The Seagull. And it's smart and funny and very deserving of the sparkling second run that it's getting at Woolly Mammoth Theater Company in Washington. That's where it made its award-winning world premiere a year ago. In The Seagull, the character of Constantine is writing a play that he hopes will explore new forms. Aaron Posner's play is his attempt at a work that is a new form and is being created right in front of us with our participation. The result is a delightfully self-reflexive play in which the characters acknowledge that they're performing a play. As Constantine's modern counterpart tells the audience, quote, "Of course I know I'm in a play. I'm right here, and you're right there. And since you can see and hear me, let's just assume I can see and hear you, too." Posner's themes echo Chekhov's: the difficulties, complications, and futility of love, art, and family, and the frustration of yearning.
I want a bottomless bowl of ice cream. A bowl the size of a bushel basket.
I just want to be loved madly, dangerously, fully.
I just want things to be like I always imagined they could be.
I just want to be the center of attention.
These are just some of the seven characters' seemingly bottomless yearnings, overtly expressed while the actors sit in a row facing the audience. You'll recognize most of the plot from Chekhov. Khan, an aspiring playwright, has grown up in the shadow of his famous actress mother. His mother is dating a famous novelist called Trigg. Khan is in love with an aspiring actress named Nina, but Nina falls in love with Trigg. Meanwhile, Mash, Posner's update of Chekhov's Masha, is in love with Khan, although Khan's old friend Dev is hopelessly in love with Mash. Well, Kimberly Gilbert's melancholy Mash sort of sums it up. To love with all your heart and know that it will never, ever be returned, and to be loved by someone else whose love you cannot possibly return. The play includes original music. Actors sit at an upright piano at the back of the stage and accompany or underscore the proceedings. And there are several songs composed by James Sugg with lyrics by the playwright. At the start, or near the start, of each of the play's three acts, Mash sings a song and accompanies herself on the ukulele.
On we go, on and on.
When the audience applauds at the end of the first dour rendition, Mash looks at us and says, "Shut up! This is not a happy woman." But no one is happy, at least not for long, in The Seagull, and the same is true here, although Posner indulges in several happier tweaks to Chekhov's ending. The writing, acting, and Howard Shalwitz's direction are all sharp. Kate Eastwood Norris delivers a powerfully charged speech when her character catches Cody Nichols' Trigg with Nina. Later, Brad Coed's gloomy, hyper-serious Khan goes on a brief but darkly amusing 11th-hour search for catharsis. The play's style is varied, as it should be in a work exploring new forms, although in truth none of the variations is especially new. The characters each have direct address monologues, and at one point between scenes, there's a lovely, unexpectedly exuberant Little Russian musical chairs dance. Misha Kochman has designed sets that also reflect different styles. The sets for Acts 1 and 3 are fairly abstract. The stage is opened up to the back wall, which features large stenciled portraits of Chekhov. The second act set is a realistic kitchen, in the tried and true tradition of American kitchen sink dramas. In the end, does Posner's play break any new ground? Maybe not, but it does offer a fresh, contemporary take on a classic, and it makes a stab at trying to do what it is about, including expressing the frustrations of a playwright trying to break new ground. The play got its start 4 years ago when Posner was directing another playwright's work at Woolly Mammoth Theater. Posner admits that when he came up with the title, he doubted it would be produced anywhere but the ever-adventuresome Woolly Mammoth. A character in the play voices a similar sentiment. This is a play in which not only the character's frustrations, but also the playwright's, are put out there for all to see. Woolly Mammoth stuck by Posner's play, developed it, produced its premiere last summer, and has brought it back now for a return engagement. The entire original cast has returned with it. I'm not surprised that they were eager for another go at this rich, funny play about the theater. Furthermore, Stupid Bird is currently also running in Los Angeles, about to open in Chicago, and a dozen other productions will be staged around the country in the coming season. So, this bird has taken flight. If you want to see where it got its wings, starring the people who taught it to fly, you can catch this witty, rare bird at Washington's Woolly Mammoth Theater.
The production is up until August 17th. We've got links to all the information you need at wypr.org/Maryland Morning.
I
I'm producer Matt Purdy. Visit us on the web to leave comments or to hear previous episodes. That's wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Thanks for listening.
I'm Tom Hall. It's time now for What You Got Cooking. August is upon us, and I suppose one depressing way of looking at that chronological reality is to observe that the end of summer is just a month away. Now, that's not to say that we won't still be able to enjoy the glories of the farmers markets in September, but this morning we thought we'd turn once again to our resident foodie, Sasha Wohlhandler, who has a few must-have ideas before the summer becomes a distant memory. Sasha and her husband, Steve Susser, run Sasha's 527 restaurant and catering on Charles Street in Baltimore. Hey, Sasha, how you doing?
Great, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
It's August. It's hot. It's sultry. It's sexy. And everything is peaking in August. Summer is peaking in August. And I thought we should talk about 10 or 8 to 10 or 12 fabulous bites that you must put in your mouth before summer ends.
All right. There's plenty of stuff to choose from. So what are we going to start with? We're going to start with tomatoes. Well, the tomatoes are like all over the place, the farmer's market. And there's so many different kinds these days. You know, you got to be like a – it's like the sommeliers in the wine. You got to be like an expert. You got to have a PhD in agriculture to know about tomatoes.
I say tomatoes are bursting with gorgeousness, juiciness, and ripeness. So many things to do with tomatoes. As you said, it's endless. But first to do, it's just the simplest. Buy the ripest, cut it open, spray it with a little delicious sea salt. When I was a young kid, one of the first things I ever learned to cook was from an Italian woman that lived next door to us. And she took basil and salt and pepper, kind of muddled it in the bottom of a bowl, put a bunch of ripe tomatoes, tossed it, didn't put any olive oil or anything on it, and 10 minutes later it had its own juices. So you can make a great tomato salad. I made one right there that had some of those tastes in it.
Yeah. And there's no olive oil.
There's no olive oil.
So you don't have to go through this elaborate, salad dressing, vinaigrette thing. Of course,
but
you can. Right.
But that just is pure tomato taste.
Mm, it's terrific.
Isn't that delicious?
And the salt and the basil just sort of
the salt draws
the tomato,
out the juices.
Yeah, make the tomato taste punch.
You certainly can add anything. But then I think one of the best things is the old white bread. I have some artisanal focaccia there. I didn't have any white bread at Sasha's. But I put it, look at that gorgeous red tomato on mayonnaise with a little bit of salt and pepper. To me, that is summer.
You can have tomato sandwiches all summer.
I just made a mini because you've got a lot of things to taste here. Mm. But tomato mayonnaise on white bread with some salt and pepper is
nothing like it.
There's absolutely nothing like it.
Fantastic.
It really is incredible. And, of course, you've got no cooked tomato sauce. It's August. Time for us to lean back, do nothing, and don't cook. I took that same kind of mixture right next to you. I chopped up a bunch of tomatoes, and I put basil. I think I put some mint in there. You can do that. You can put a little EVOO. You can put chopped thyme, minced garlic, a little bit of red pepper. And put that on some hot pasta.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a great fresh tomato sauce. No cook. Well, everybody, no cooking.
You cook the pasta, but you don't have to cook the tomatoes. Right.
Nothing.
And they're fresh
Toss
and they're
it.
Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. When you cook your pasta, save a little bit of
yummy.
That pasta water to just make the pasta a little more clingy. And also, if you want, put a little bit of your olive oil on the pasta. But then toss it with that fabulous fresh tomato mixture. Folks, it's 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It is fantastic.
Easy, and it doesn't heat up the kitchen on a hot day.
Exactly.
It's terrific. Yeah, great.
And, of course, gazpacho.
Oh, yeah.
Who isn't going to tell the kids while they're taking out the garbage, they got to make the gazpacho.
Right.
That's how easy it is. Really, a bunch of tomatoes, peppers, onions, a bottle of tomato juice, or if you want to use V8 juice, put it all together with a bunch of seasonings. I'll put the recipe on there. Throw it in your blender. Hello.
Yeah.
It is so refreshing.
Right. And you can really put almost anything in there. You can
anything.
Put zucchini. You can put cucumbers
There's
in there. Any kinds of peppers.
Anything
and stuff, right?
you want goes into gazpacho. So, I mean, we could go on for endlessly about tomatoes. Folks, buy your ripest, eat them, juiciest. It's delicious. But we have to go on to peaches.
Love peaches. And they are looking beautiful at the farmer's market.
Peaches are fabulous. Have you been pinching a peach?
I have indeed.
I mean,
I pinch one every week. I mean, Mr. Reed, Dan Reed has those beautiful peaches at the farmer's market under the expressway, and they just couldn't be more delicious.
There's umpteen things to do with them. I'm going to go really quickly. I've got a little crostini with a slice of peach on blue cheese. Mm-hmm. That is delicious. I've got a slice of peach that I've got prosciutto around.
Blue cheese, that's a great thing. Blue cheese and peach on a little crostini.
And then there's a peach which has prosciutto around it and a touch of lime. Mm-hmm. Delicious. Oh. I grilled a half a peach. Put it on the grill with a little olive oil, flesh side down. Mm-hmm. Then turn it over, put a big pat of butter and a bunch of brown sugar and put a little tin foil over it or close your grill for another 4 minutes. Take that hot peach out and top it with cold ice cream or whipped cream. It is deep.
And you can cook it for that long. 4 minutes seems like a long time or four, you know, but
you've got to see what your peach is like.
Yeah, but that's interesting. You don't have to be too super careful.
No.
They're heartier than they look.
Exactly.
Yeah, good.
I'm going to move us on
that's
to watermelon.
Oh, I love watermelon.
Look at that watermelon salad I made there, folks.
Oh,
I put cucumber. I put feta cheese. I put blueberries and red onion. You could put strawberries, too. It is just a delicious, great combination.
With the watermelon and the feta together is just fabulous. And then you get the little cucumber and stuff.
That's delicious. I mean, it's a great bite for the summer, folks. You're not cooking here. You're just cutting and chopping and biting. It's delicious. Summer
in that order. Cut, chop, and bite.
Corn on the cob, you can do umpteen different ways. We're not going to linger too long. For some reason this summer, I have been grilling it. Husks off. Last summer I was grilling it husks on. I'm kind of liking it with husks off. You can use butter on it. I like it naked, but then you know I like everything naked.
That's true.
And you can roll it at any kind of compound butter. What's your favorite corn on the cob combination?
Well, you know, I don't usually put it in combination with anything.
I mean,
I boil it and it just tastes so good, you know. But you actually are unhusking it and putting the kernels right on the grill itself.
Yeah, and turning it around.
You just keep it going and you just blacken it a little
great.
Bit.
Mm-hmm. Zucchini, unbelievable. Really cut them on a mandolin, really nice and thin. Toss it with some mint, some basil, again, some feta or goat cheese, salt and pepper, a little oil and vinegar. It's a wonderful salad. Or grill that zucchini, cut it a little thicker,
right,
and put that with olive oil on the grill, salt and pepper. Take it off and put big shards of Parmesan on it. Wonderful.
Eggplant works beautifully that way.
Oh, my God. All your vegetables are great. There's one protein to me that screams summer. I mean, we've been grilling and grilling all kinds of proteins, but I had to saute a soft-shell crab. Guys, if you haven't had one yet this summer, go and get one.
Now's the time.
Is the time, and it is so delicious, and it is so easy to do. Have your fishmonger clean it for you. Come home, heat up some olive oil or regular vegetable oil, get it good and hot, and then put your soft shell in some flour with salt and pepper. Put it in the olive oil. Let it go 2.5 minutes or thereabouts till it's brown on one side. Flip it over. Remember, it'll sputter a little, so be careful of that. Let it brown on the other side. Take it out. Put it in a warm oven to just heat a little bit. Put a big glob of butter in there, some fresh lemon juice, some fresh parsley. That screaming delicious.
Good stuff. And, of course, you know, the crab population, Dan Roddick was just talking about this on his show just a few days ago. You know, the crab population is very much in danger. But when they're here, they're here, and we have them at least,
and
you know, for the moment.
If
and
you're going to have
so
them
delicious.
For a moment.
This
bite
is the time.
Into it.
This
right.
is the time. Yeah, soft-shell crabs. Did we have a chance to talk about this wonderful
We've
salsa?
We've got that
you
great peach salsa.
That peach salsa.
What I did is I took your fresh peaches right there, red onion, cilantro, lime juice, chopped it all together, a little chili powder, a little cumin. Put a fresh potato chip in there. It is delicious.
Couldn't
or
be.
That would be beautiful on anything you're grilling. The only thing to be follow all this by, the blueberries are so gorgeous this summer.
Sure
and they are so delicious. Put them on ice cream with a touch of chocolate sauce or a little Grand Marnier. And you have a dessert that screams summer. It's 100% no cooking, 100% great enjoyment. This talk, the theme has been about hot August. Nature has given us the best. Be lazy, just enjoy the glorious bounty that's here for the savoring and biting. do your cooking in September.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Hunker down, go to the markets, and bite.
All right, Sasha. Well, many thanks. We shall see you in September. Sasha Wallhandel and her husband, Steve Sisser, own Sasha's 527 Restaurant and Catering on Charles Street in Baltimore. Come to our website, wipr.org/Maryland Morning, for some of the recipes that Sasha and I talked about this morning. Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast is an original production of Your Public Radio, WIPR, in Baltimore. You can learn more about what you've heard on our show or catch something you've missed on our website. Again, the address is wipr.org/Maryland Morning. The show is produced by Matt Purdy and Jamila Kay. Nathan Sterner is our director and engineer. Brandon Block, Alexander Kennedy, and Justina Latimer give us production help. That's it for us today. Coming up Wednesday, local author Paul Valentine talks about his new novel, The Road to Goshen Shoals. Hope you can join us on Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.